I'm pleased to have joining the podcast today John Warren, who has been the lead vocalist for the band Killed by Kane and currently has the new project Moonshine Zombies out and about. John, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me on, Joe.
So people that don't know you and kind of not familiar with your background, we're going to get into that. But are you in Kentucky currently? Is that where you're originally from?
Born and raised in Kentucky.
What part?
Right now I live in Cedar Grove, Kentucky, which is about 30 minutes south of Louisville.
Okay. Did you grow up going to, now I guess you're there, but did you go to Louisville, Cincinnati, a lot of those places growing up and do stuff around those towns?
Actually, I grew up in Louisville.
Okay. So are you a big college basketball fan? Or did that just, yeah.
It's kind of faded over time, but yeah, obviously Kentucky Wildcats, probably the greatest basketball team of all time.
Right. Yeah, I know college basketball is pretty big in Kentucky. You know, it's I'm a sports fan, and it's got to be weird to live in a state where you have no professional sports at all. So I guess you can cling on to your college teams, too, a little bit more, places like that, especially when you got a really great program like they've had.
Yes.
But growing up in Kentucky, not a lot of people think about rock stars or musicians coming from Kentucky. Obviously, I think if people know the scene with Christian rock or metal or anything, they are familiar that Bride is from Kentucky. And is there any other artist out there that influenced you or you grew up with, even maybe not Kentucky, but you know, what did you kind of get drawn into music and who was influencing you?
Yeah, just growing up as a kid, having zero control of the radio, was definitely influenced. My grandparents would play Elvis quite a bit.
That's a good one.
That was the first person I ever gravitated towards. And, you know, back then you had the physical albums. So I would kind of, as a kid, I would look at the albums and you would see this guy in this jumpsuit and kind of a larger than life person at the time. And now at that point, just being a young kid, I never thought at that time that I would ever, you know, get into music, but it kind of started that passion for it.
Did you start off playing any instrument? I thought I read somewhere you play drums. Or play drums?
No, guitar.
Just guitar? Actually,
yes, started out playing guitar and had probably been playing, I don't know, maybe for a year and a half or so, and was getting pretty good at it. And I had met a friend who ended up, we've had a friendship for several decades, ended up being the guitar player. And what happened was we hooked up and he was a lot better than I was. Yeah. So basically the story goes, I just told him I couldn't compete with what he was doing. And he said, hey, you know, you've kind of got a good look. Why don't you sing? And I said, I do not sing.
Really?
And at the time I had no desire to sing. And Anthony is a very determined person. And he just gave me a look and said, look, practice.
Yeah.
And really the rest is history. I just was very tenacious about it. And
how did you find your style then? If you're practicing, then what did you gravitate to or how did you discover your voice?
You know, I've never had anybody ask me that, but that's a great question. Basically, the great thing about Anthony and I was when we started, we both loved Led Zeppelin, Van Halen, but what we did with limited resources is we would just write music and we never did other people's music. So okay. Everything was very raw, very unintentional. And I got to be honest with you, when we started out, like I said, we were very tenacious and determined. And it really consumed a lot of our time and we were very dedicated, but we were not very good.
How old were you when you guys were starting?
16 years old.
Okay. What was kind of going on with the music scene around that time? What year would that be?
That would be in the, I guess, the mid 80s. So, I mean, all at right. that time, Van Halen is what was that first band that I watched
yeah.
and listened to. And I said, I'd like to be like that guy. Just the, you know, Van Halen, they had the look, the sound. And that's when I was like, I would love to be a part of something like that. And that really got the ball rolling.
So was like David Lee Roth a pretty big influence on you then?
He was an influence, but I never took it in that direction, meaning Anthony and I just wrote our own music. So everything was just so primal and just it evolved into our own sound. And we really didn't know how to do it differently and never, you know, a lot of bands, especially where we are from, they did cover songs. They did other people's music. And even to this day, Anthony is not a big fan of doing cover songs. So everything we've done from then up until now is we pretty much just do our own music.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see where he's coming from as a musician, too. I mean, I like to create my own. So I play drums. I want to create my own, you know, thing with the music and not have to worry about trying to mimic someone else's, what they came up with, you know, just, it's more natural to have your own thing instead of playing. And it's good to have cover bands. I mean, it's cool and to do that, but, you know, I totally understand what he's kind of saying there. What kind of stuff were you guys writing about? Were you writing the typical stuff at 16, you know, about girls or was there anything, you know, deeper or bigger that you were trying to write about?
I guess, obviously when we first started out, I mean, it was one of those things where doing our own music, all of a sudden I'm not just singing, but I've got to do lyrics. So this was just a lot of responsibility for a young guy, but like I said, I enjoyed it. So I came from a Pentecostal background. So a lot of the stuff, you know, kind of had that, I guess you could say, just that conservative view. And it just kind of evolved from there. You know, being from Kentucky, basically, you know, my parents hardworking couple, working all week long for the weekend, going to church on Sundays. That kind of lifestyle kind of rubbed off on me at the time.
Were you listening to or introduced to any kind of Christian bands? Because that was kind of coming around there, you know, Stryper or Petra or anything like that. Or were your parents strict with things like that at all?
My mother was a little strict with it. Here's the thing. When you start going back in time like that, we don't have to talk about how far back.
How were the dinosaurs? No, I'm just joking.
So, you know, you didn't have all the information out there. So honestly, how I even got into music was my uncle was a great musician, had a great voice. So we used to hang out a lot. And all this stuff happened within a year. We would hang out and he would play guitar. I'd be hanging out with my uncle Gary and we would be hanging out and he'd play guitar and sing. And he loved gospel music and would just sing all these songs I was unfamiliar with, but he had such a great voice and I would just sit there and listen to him. Yeah. And he had taken me to a show at this real small venue. I want to say maybe it was like a cafe house, something like that. And there was this three-piece band playing and they went by the name of Matrix.
Okay.
And of course I'd never heard of them. And you know, he takes me and wanted me to see this group he had heard about. So we went and watched and it, like I said, it was a three-piece band and man, this guy singing, I mean, this guy's voice was so powerful and it sounded like he was just going to, you know, come through the speakers. And I was like, man, these guys, and I could tell they weren't much older than me. And I was just really impressed by what they were doing and bought a few of their demo tapes. And come to find out, they were a gospel group. And I started kind of following them a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were incredible, which Matrix ended up turning it into the band Bride.
Which was Del, I think, was Del playing bass at the same at the time too?
In those yes, early days? The three-piece band, Del was playing bass. And I thought they were really good at the time.
Yeah. So was that your first official real concert to go to? Or did you go to something else?
I want to say my first real concert was Night Ranger.
Okay.
Played at the State Fair. But as far as that kind of music, because Matrix was playing like, a progressive metal.
Mm-hmm.
They had a progressive metal sound. So that was the first group I had seen that was, that style of music. And I mean, I was like, oh man, I really like what they were doing.
When you heard, I guess at the time, and then more you listened to Del singing, did you kind of take something from that to make your own also? Because later on, when we talk about Killed by Kane and the connection you have there with Del, but your voice kind of has a Del sound to it, I thought, so I'm wondering, maybe it wasn't on purpose or maybe it was on purpose, but how did that work out? Or if
your thoughts? Well, what happened, like I said, at that young age, I was just continually evolving. And as I'm evolving, I started listening to different vocalists, because right then that hard rock heavy metal scene really took off in the mid 80s. So you had your Brian Johnson of AC/DC, your Ronnie James Dio. Actually, one of my favorites is Blackie Lawless. I'm not necessarily talking about the music in general, but the voices were very powerful. And obviously Del had a very powerful voice. So all those singers I just brought up, I thought had a similar style. It was very raspy.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. So I started singing a lot more aggressive, and kind of, it just kind of developed into that. I just kind of just let go and was giving it all I had. And with that came that raspy, kind of screechy vocal.
When do things become more serious with music in that direction? And when does White Ray come along, the band? Is that soon after?
Yeah, that was maybe a year into it. And that kind of developed into the first real band I was into. So as far as being serious, I want to say at the age of 19, I mean, we were a band back then from the age of 16 to 19. I would say on average, we rehearsed 3 to 4 days a week.
Mm.
I don't want to say religiously, but I mean, we were a tight band. So if we took a couple weeks off here and there, it was not a big deal. But once we got out of high school, Anthony and I kind of raised the bar, and there was an accountability to the other musicians in the band, meaning this is how many times we're going to rehearse, this is what time, this is what's expected. And we had to let a few members go here and there because of that. They were not as serious as we were. And because of that, if you weren't willing to put in the time, then we would just sit down and talk to the person, say, and it was never like, hey, this isn't working. It was more like, hey, you're not putting in the time, and basically wanted to see what they had to say about it. So maybe somebody just got married or this or that, and maybe their priorities shifted. But for Anthony and I, we were focused on the music and actually, being younger, 19 years old, which is the great thing about being younger. you see things differently. So we had nothing to lose. We were like, let's, you know, let's see what we can do.
Tell me what the band name, where's that come from?
You know, so Anthony had came up with a name, but there were some things that had went on right when I had met all those guys and got in that group. There was some guys in the neighborhood that were in an accident, and it was literally by looking at the car and all the stories from the accident, there's no way these guys should have walked away from this accident. And it was kind of a life-changing experience. Being younger, everybody, we're all having a good time. We're all drinking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
think you're going to live really forever.
That's right. And that kind of got us in a, I guess, got us in a different direction. So we kind of took on a different approach. The lyrics changed, things like that. So,
yeah. So you kind of stepped maybe a little bit more into your Christian background a little bit with the way, the direction, maybe a little it bit. Just, is that what it, you're, maybe?
Well, it made us take a step back and think, yeah, maybe we need to go in a different direction. You know, all the drinking and
yeah,
different things that we were doing. Hey, it's, this is not a good thing.
So the name White Ray, what is that? Is there a meaning behind it, or?
If I remember correctly, because I did not come up with a name, it was basically, if you've ever looked up at the sky on a beautiful day, it's blue, the clouds and everything, and you'll see that ray coming through the clouds and from the sun. And that was, I think for Anthony, that was looking at that and seeing that was a vision.
When did White Ray become something serious, and who was involved in the band? Was you, Anthony, is Steve Kurtzinger there, and who's playing drums? Or
boy, you're really really getting me on this one. Well, obviously Steve was not an original member on bass, and I got to be honest. We had so many bass players, I wouldn't know where to begin.
Yeah, it's okay.
We would have guitar players fill in to play bass. Like I said, we were so dedicated that, you know, people did not want to put in the time. So we had a bass player named Mark Lynch that I would consider our first real bass player. So the crazy thing about Mark was, he joins the band. He was unbelievable bass player. He was a few years older than us. So we did a few shows, and Mark had already signed to go into the service. So what happened was, and we had a good little following all of a sudden, and we could see that things were kind of gaining a little bit of momentum, even at that young age. And I think Mark at the time really regretted going into the service and was really trying to get out of it. But nevertheless, so at the last show that Mark was at, little, like I said, there was kind of a buzz going around about our band. Okay. And there was a guy named Steve Kurtzinger out in the crowd. And after the show, him and his wife came up and spoke to us. And he's, you know, basically said, man, I love what you guys are doing. I love your sound. And then next, we actually exchanged numbers. And obviously, I reached out to him not even a couple weeks later and said, hey, we're looking for a bass player. Would you be interested? And once Steve joined the band, I think that's when it really took off.
Well, is he a little bit older than you guys at the time? Well, still, obviously, his age had changed, but...
No, it's okay. I want to say Steve's a couple years older than I am.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you say he's married, too. So, you know, that's been a factor with other members. You've kind of said about them taking things serious, because marriage, you know, young married couples, and how that can impact a band of young guys trying to make it or whatever it might be. But How were you guys playing shows? Was it Matrix at the time, or were you playing a Bride, whatever they might have been? Did you get to play shows with those guys?
Never did a show with Matrix. We would play all. I mean, we were doing shows at bars, at teen clubs, small venues, and just playing as much as we could. Actually, we were playing in bars before we were even 21, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to do.
But we just, I mean, we tried to play as much as we could.
So what was kind of the goal? What were you guys wanting to do with that band?
Well, especially back then, our goal was to get signed to a record label. That's all so we were one of these bands that played a lot, but actually Anthony's main focus was always on making the songs better and to constantly write. So what happened was we did a lot of demo recordings.
And that was my next question I wanted to ask you about.
So, that's where Del and Troy come in.
Where were you recording demos with, and how do they get involved, and what's their involvement with your demos?
Well, our first demo was a two-song demo that I don't even have a copy of, and I want to say nobody has really ever heard it.
Oh.
And it's buried way back. But anyway, I think the studio was called 2020 Studio. It was not a very good studio, but obviously being teenagers, we didn't have that much money.
Right.
We did a two-song demo, and it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
And
was it something that you could sell at shows to, like for cassettes or?
Yes, but that particular demo, we didn't sell it. We used it to shop around. We made a two-song demo. So we started shopping around. Well, the thing was, at that time, I had bought a couple Matrix tapes. And at the time, I didn't have, Troy's number, but they had like a P.O. box on it. So I sent a letter to Troy, and he responded, and he gave me his number, which, I was very surprised. And I said, hey, I'm in this group. We're trying to, put some demos together. I like the sound of your demos. So basically, that's what happened. He said, well, this is where we go.
Okay. So, to record.
Yes. So basically what we did was we liked the sound of their demos. We thought they sounded really good. And so anyway, we went into the same studio they did. And
where was that based out of?
That was in Louisville.
Okay.
It was on top of Mom's Music. There was a big loft on top of it. And it was an awesome recording studio. So that is when we got a real taste of what recording was about, because the engineer at the time was a perfectionist.
Yeah.
But we were on a limited budget, meaning we drove that guy crazy because we were right behind him when he was on that control panel, trying to get as much out of him as possible with the least amount of money.
Yeah.
So, but we love and still do. I think Anthony and I, above everything, love the recording process. But the demos from that point on with Howie, our demo game stepped up. And Troy and I developed a friendship. And he said, look, I'm going to show you how to do a bio, package your bio, to send out to these record labels. So he was very instrumental in kind of taking me under his wing and helping me out with that.
Were they signed yet? Were they on Pure Metal at that yes. point?
Yeah, I think they had already put out maybe Show No Mercy album.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So he was very helpful, you know, helping me put that package together to promo pack. I guess that's what you called it back then. Mm-hmm. So and we just started sending these demos out everywhere and got a few bites here and there, but it never, nothing really came out of it.
I read something, and I don't know, you know, obviously with the internet, who knows what's true, but it says something where there was a contest that you guys won for REX. Is that true, or is there anything to that's true that got you the record deal or later?
That is true, but it had not REX. So we had sent a promotional package. There was a festival in Decatur, Illinois.
Yeah, Cornerstone.
It was, no, you know what? Else? Hold on, let me think here. It was something else.
Okay.
And they had two stages. So we sent in for this contest, and the winner got a record contract. So we sent in our demo. I get a call from the guy promoting it, and he said, "Hey, we would like to have you in this contest." I forget how many bands were in it.
Right. So they were bringing the bands to play live, and then basing their judgment on that for the winner.
Yes. Well, okay. Crowd. No. Okay. This is something that I can hang my hat on.
Yeah.
Two things happened that we were very proud of. So they had a booth set up for, I think there was about 2,000 people at this. And that was the biggest crowd at the time we had ever played in front of. Mm. So the crowd picked the winner.
Okay.
So what and to make it more impressive, they drew names out of hats to see what order you went in. So obviously nobody wants to be first.
No.
Well, guess what?
You went first.
We drew first.
Oh gosh.
Now here's the great thing. We were very tenacious. I mean, we rehearsed 4 days a week, and I think with that show coming up, I think we may have before that show went 6 days in a row. So we went out and just, I think there's a recording somewhere in the house of it, but we went out there and just did a great job. And when I went off stage, I was like, we did a great job. I still didn't think that we would win. Some of the other bands were good. I don't think the stage presence was as good. I think that was the only thing that maybe won us over. We got the crowd. We had one song in particular where we could get the crowd involved. There was a lot of crowd participation. Yeah. At the time, I moved a lot. So we ended up winning the contest. But back to the record label thing, something happened and they reneged on it. And we did not get that contract.
Oh, wow. So was it an actual popular record label back then, or was it just some kind of like independent label?
Well, it was Star Song, and the crazy thing was, oh, really? I don't know if you're familiar with Des Dickerson.
Of course I am. Yeah. From Prince, and he was in charge of Star Song. And
right. So he played guitar for Prince. Well, he was the A&R guy at the time, if I remember. So I got to meet him before the show. I met him after, obviously, because we won.
Yeah.
And you know, we're going to put this together. And we were real excited. And then, you know, waiting by the phone. And then just, it doesn't happen. Mm. So we just kind of moved on from it and just got right back in the studio, started recording more.
Who's at that current time, who's actually in your band? Do you just have four members, or who's your lineup?
It was Anthony Bowling, Steve Kurtzinger, Todd Walker, and I.
Okay.
So really, all through the process, besides some solo stuff I've done, The core group has always been Anthony, who's the founder that writes all the music, Steve and I. I mean, the crazy thing is I can get out all our promo pictures. It's almost a Spinal Tap of it's these three same guys and this drummer. We could not keep a drummer. But here's the crazy thing. You brought up the contest that we won. Is there was a guy by the name of Steve Gilbert was in a group at the time in that contest.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the name of the group, but obviously I had already met Steve before at a bride rehearsal.
No.
And at the time, I mean, Steve was kind of quiet. You know, I've been to a few of the rehearsals and we didn't talk a whole lot. But after that show, we talked and exchanged numbers. And then we needed a drummer and I reached out to Steve. And then that just put us there again. We just kept evolving between hard work, putting in the time, recording. So once Steve joined, I felt like we went up another level.
What happens with the band? And then because nothing really happens with it, I guess, with making it or getting anything further going, because then Killed by Cain is kind of where things pick up again. So what is the transition from that band to Killed by Cain and being on a record label and hooking up with Dell and that whole thing happening?
The funny thing about that is here Anthony and I do all this recording, which we wouldn't have done it any different, sending out all these demo packages. And of course, there's no internet back then. So the way that maybe somebody hears about you is either going to be through the radio or a magazine or just through word of mouth. So we're doing all these demo tapes. We did a show in White House, Tennessee. And after the show, this guy walks up to me, introduces himself. I want to say his name was Tyler Bacon. And he introduced himself. Hey, I'm the A&R guy for this REX Records. Been hearing a lot of good stuff about you. I've heard a few songs. Would you be interested in meeting, I think his name's Doug Mann. Would you be interested in meeting Doug and I in Nashville? We could set up a meeting. And I was like, sure. So I don't know. It could have been a month later, but it was soon after meeting him. All four of us, because we did everything together, all four of us went up to Nashville and met them for lunch. So we're talking, and then Doug just says, hey, would you guys like to record an album with us? We like what we see. We like what we've heard. We would love to do an album with you. And we were like, yes. I mean, we had nothing to lose. But then all of a sudden, him and Tyler look at each other and they said, but there is a condition. So I don't know what this condition is going to be. And they were like, you got to change that name.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
You have to change the name. So the funny thing is we had wrote a song, which never made an album. We wrote a song called Killed by Cain.
Yeah.
So I did not consult the band or anything, but it was kind of like Johnny on the spot. They said, you got to change the name of your band. Do you guys have a name? And I just said, well, I think we may have a name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you got? And I said, Killed by Cain. And they were like, oh my, this is, we love it.
Cool.
So basically that's what happened. And that was that switch over from early on to that next chapter.
And when do you guys start recording that? How do you get Dell to come in and produce the album also? Or where do you guys record this album at?
You know, as far as Dell Thompson producing the album, we didn't have anything to do with that. And in hindsight, what I think happened, Bride was really, I think it was Kinetic Faith, maybe. They were really starting to see some success and were really moving the needle at the time. And I think what happened was we would get compared to their sound a little bit, that bluesy, maybe a touch of that Southern sound. And I think what it was is they were like, hey, if we get Dell involved on this project, it's probably going to guarantee to sell so many just by having his name on it.
Yeah.
Now, they never told me that, but Dell at the time had not produced an album. Dell has always been known for a great vocalist and a great songwriter. So basically they hired Dell, and then, you know, Dell gets with me, and then he starts coming to the rehearsals. So I think we did about a month's worth of rehearsals, about 3 days a week. Dell would come to at least one or two a week, and we did a little bit of pre-production. And then we did all our tracking in Brentwood, Tennessee at the Salt Mine.
Okay.
And then we mixed the album in Nashville at a place called the Omni. So it was a 2 week process.
That's pretty short, to be honest with you.
Yes.
For a full album. How was it working with Dell, with him being a first time producer and coming into that situation with you guys?
Well, I think we were all friends and we treated it that way, which maybe in hindsight, maybe hurt the integrity of the project a little bit, but we were all new to it. We had a great time recording the album, but I think it was a new process for all of us.
Yeah. How was he on you as a vocalist then, with direction or whatever it might be with him and his, you know, what he can do? You know, how did he try to get things out of you in the studio?
I learned a lot from Dell in those few weeks, because a lot of times if on a vocal delivery, he would take a look at the lyrics and he taught me a little bit. He would say, why don't you try this? He goes, there's just too many words here. And he could take what I was trying to say and shorten, take a word out here and there and manipulate things. And actually from that point, I grew quite a bit as a vocalist and doing lyrics. I learned a lot from him on that. So he was a big help in that department.
Yeah. And he actually did some vocals on the album too. Is that correct?
The intro of the album is him.
So that's Intro to Hypocrisy. Is that him? Is that the one?
Yes.
All right. But everything, did he do any kind of background vocals, or everything was just production from that point?
No, he did a little bit of backups vocal on Sin City. If you listen towards the end, you can, I mean, if you really listen, you can hear his voice. And he actually wrote all the lyrics to Thou Shalt Not Kill, where I'm just doing vocals. He actually wrote the lyrics to that song, but I put the melodies to it.
It's crazy that album is, it says it's a 35 minute album. That's a quick, short album. I mean, I'm guessing that, you know, looking at that, but what was the goal after this, or did your record label make promises to you that, you know, we're going to do this for you, that for you, we want you to go tour? You know, what does happen after the album does come out?
Well, after the album comes out, we kind of go back to what we always did, which was go back to writing and perform. So at that point, we started doing more shows, quite a bit more shows. And it was frustrating because we have an album out and we're told it's selling this much. And we're playing in front of, like, one night we might play in front of a couple hundred people.
Mm-hmm.
The next night we might play in front of 20 or 1,000 people, and then 100. And then, I mean, it, and we weren't making a lot of money, and it was just, it was a frustrating process, especially where we were. And, ultimately that was kind of the demise of us, because just, it didn't turn out the way that we thought. And everybody was kind of going in a different direction.
Were you guys ever put on a tour, maybe like a short tour with any other bands or label mates or anything like that to try to get things going?
No, because what happened was after that album came out, Anthony talked to me and said, look, I think we could do better. Mm-hmm. And I really want to write a new album. So at that time, we think we're going to make a follow-up album with them. And I expressed that to the A&R guy. Hey, we're working on a new band. Here's the crazy thing. If you go back and listen to that self-titled album, you will start to hear my vocal style on a few songs. It changes a little bit. I start using the lower register a little bit. And right then and there, I started changing my vocal style, where I'm not, screaming as much. I'm using that low end. And these songs, these first few songs that we had were incredible, but they didn't want to hear anything about it. They wanted us to promote that album more than worry about the new songs. So we were just kind of going back and forth with that. We were kind of wanting to do both. And it was just kind of a mutual agreement that we would not keep going.
So does the band actually break up?
Yes.
Okay. And the other interesting bride connection would be Steve goes on to play with Bride as their bass player. How did that come about, and how did that affect you at all, or were you happy for him, or were you like, man, I wish we could still be playing together or do something? Or
at that time, it was kind of refreshing not to be playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, if you go back from the age of 16 to where we're right at that particular time, I mean, we're doing it 3-4 days a week.
Right. And you're probably burnt out.
And I really, at that time, I didn't feel very creative. So what happened was, I can't even remember how the breakup happened. Honestly, it's been so long ago, but it was just kind of a mutual agreement. And the thing was, we all remain friends. So I get, I don't know, maybe a month into that, I get a call from Dale, which speaks volumes about Dale's character. He calls me and he calls me Johnny. And we small talk for a bit. And he said, Johnny, I just want to ask you something and make sure it's okay. Because he didn't really know the backstory. And he goes, look, we were thinking about reaching out to Steve to play bass. We need a bass player, and I wanted to make sure you would be okay with it. And I said, sure. I think that's a great idea. So no reservations at all. And I honestly, it's all came full circle, and I think it was good for Steve. All those shows they did over in Brazil.
Oh yeah. Some huge shows over there.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean,
I saw Steve when he must have just joined the band. Scarecrow had just come out, and I remember he was there. He had to be pretty new, but he would go on to play with Bride for quite a while, didn't he?
Yes. I think he did a good job. I think it was good for everybody.
Yeah. How was, you know, you're still friends with him. He plays, you guys still play together. I mean, what does he say about that point in time in life and working with Bride? I mean, you're in a pretty popular band in the Christian industry. But also you're coming to a band and the music industry, unfortunately, is changing too. So I know Bride kind of got experimental with the Drop album, and then they come back and do some other stuff. And then, you know, I don't know how that, I wonder how that impacted him or what he, his thoughts of, okay, what am I thought I was coming into something else, but it's kind of changed a little bit. I don't know if he's ever expressed that to you, or if you'd just rather have Steve explain that hopefully one day.
Well, to me. If you go back and look at Bride, if you start really looking at the albums, they constantly, one thing I like about them, even maybe even there's an album or two that, you know, maybe I'm like, well, that album was okay. The one thing that I always loved about those guys is every few albums, you could always see Dellon Troy's writing evolving and changing. Mm-hmm. It's like every album, they're like, let's do this a little bit different. I like that. I'm not sure if everybody likes it. But as far as how Steve felt about that, here's the crazy thing. When I got out of music, not too long after I got out of music, and Steve and I didn't talk for, which wasn't a bad thing. We didn't talk for years.
Yeah. Well, so, you didn't really have that thing to, that kept you bonded going on, you know?
Right. Now, so, Anthony and I stayed friends, but, you know, even at that, we're both working. We both have our own lives. We weren't, you know, we're not talking all the time.
Yeah. So what is going on in your life after the end of that band? And there's just seems like a big gap before we kind of get you back into music with what we're going to talk about next. I mean, unless there's something in between I'm unaware of. I mean, what's going on with your life?
I did a solo album.
Okay.
About 2 years after I got out of the Killed by Cain project, I was had a guitar and just kind of just doing some songs.
Mm-hmm. So it was low key, was it like acoustic stuff?
Yeah, or? Just writing acoustic songs with no intention of recording or anything, because you have to understand, as a kid up until this point, Anthony writes everything. He writes all the music, and then I've got to put melodies and lyrics to it. So as far as being a songwriter of, you know, basically that foundation of the music with the vocals, no, that was something new to me. And so I'm actually putting these songs together, and I'm like, you know what? These are pretty good. And, but I'm not a musician. I'm really not a musician. It's always been to play guitar is for me as a tool to write songs.
Right.
So what happened was I write about 3 or 4 songs and I'm playing for somebody. They're like, man, those are pretty good. So I call Howie up, the guy that did all our demos. I said, hey, man, I've got some songs. I'd love to record them. I'd like you to hear them. I go up to the studio. He hears them. He's like, John, these are pretty good. So what we do is we take these raw songs that have a lot of emotion that are really good, that I would say are, they're black and white. You know, there's no color to them. And what we do is we assemble these great studio musicians. They come in. This was so new to me. They come in, and there was one guy that orchestrated everything. He did all the keys, all the synthesizer, piano, keyboard. He came in and we would sit down and we would work the songs out. And he's like, oh, wait a minute, let's change the key of this. Mm. He would say, let's try your vocals in this key. And then he would chart all the music that him and I sat down and worked with. And he would hand these to the studio musicians. And each song was done in about two takes. These guys are staring at a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And they're phenomenal. So, yeah, I put out that solo album.
Was that independently put out or was that through a label?
It was independently put out. And I honestly, I did that for myself.
Yeah.
And
is there a way people can hear that now? Or is it streaming or anything?
I had 500 copies. I've got 50. I kept one box.
Yeah.
I have them on CD. I have thought about maybe putting them on a streaming service, but
yeah, man, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. I've just been hesitant with what we have going on now to put anything else out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I understand you got a new thing going on that you want to focus on and maybe not take the focus off of that, but what kind of style of music was that? Or how would you describe the sound of that solo project you had?
Most people that heard it said it had the thing about my voice is I could be singing about the happiest thing in the world. And my voice has kind of a somber sound. So those songs that I recorded, even though they're kind of acoustic and kind of mellow songs, are depressing. they just come across. So I would get kind of a Pink Floyd, like a Southern Pink Floyd kind of vibe.
Man, you gotta send me an MP3 or something, man. I'd love to hear that if you get a chance.
Yeah, most of the album it has acoustic, piano, synthesizer in it. So it's and I think it turned out well.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of people out there would love to hear it, maybe. So if you ever decide to do anything with it, hit me up, let me know. I'd definitely like to let people know. But moving on, so you had that, but then you really didn't have anything else until when? What year did you guys start kind of coming up with this moonshine zombie concept of let's have this band, let's do this? So
I want to say about 3 years ago. You know, Anthony and I have always remained friends, have always kept in touch. So Anthony has me over his house and he's purchased all this studio equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean like, you know, a lot of people say they have studios. Yeah,
like real stuff, real studio.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I've always wanted to do this. This is what I got.
Wow. That's awesome. I'm just
blown away. So then, you know, a couple of weeks later, he calls me and he's like, hey, I've been working on a few songs. Why don't you come over here and help me out? So okay. I come over and we just start writing. You know, it's like we just never left off. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just like we picked it right back up.
You're just clicking again.
So three songs into it, I'm like, man, these are pretty good. And meaning everything was going in slow motion. The greatest thing about the Moonshine Zombies project versus anything else I've ever done is everything's in slow motion now. Meaning when I hear something, everything comes to me a lot easier. I'm enjoying the process. And I just think it's so much better than anything that we've ever done before.
Yeah.
So it went from those three songs to let's do an album. And then from there on, it is just took off.
Yeah. And a couple things I want to get to with that. What was the first song that you guys did create? Did that go on the self-titled album? Is that one of the songs on there?
Every song that was obviously on both of these albums, there are songs that we didn't put on there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think on the first album we cut two songs. On this last one, we maybe cut one off.
Yeah, because the first album has 12 total songs, if I'm not mistaken.
It's either 11 or 12. I hate to say, I don't know.
Let me ask you, of course, about the band name there. I mean, it's a cool band name. Where does that come from? Who came up with that name?
Well, what happened? Anthony's like, well, we need to come up with it. You know, he runs everything. He's in charge. He gets the ball rolling quite a bit. And he'll give me task. Hey, I need you to do this. So he says, hey, we need to come up with a name. And he was involved in the process too. Basically, his process is, I'm going to try to come up with a name, and then he's going to say yes or no.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell you some of the names I came up with, but it was like, no. Not bad. And then I might get, that's not bad. So the original name that we had, that he was like, okay, was Kentucky Hillbilly Revival. So, okay. And we even came up with a logo and everything for it. And then he comes to me and he's like, you know what? Sounds too country.
Mm.
So we scrapped that. And I mean, it took about a week or so to come up with that name. I just started throwing paint at the wall. So Moonshine Zombies basically represents that, you know, we're from Kentucky. You got your moonshine. Mm. And then zombies just kind of represents a group of people, meaning like-minded people. In other words, you know, everybody has that unity thing. So basically being from Kentucky, that certain kind of lifestyle that we have. So that's where the zombies come from. It's just a unity of a way of life. So we like that name, Moonshine Zombies.
And who is officially in this band? I mean, it's pretty much the same core guy. Who's on drums?
Well, what had happened was for the first album, we used a session player.
Okay.
And this is a pretty good story. So we use a session player and we're going to record our first video. And the drummer at the time, who's a great friend of mine, incredible drummer, great session player. I thought he was joking at the time. He goes, you know, I was like, hey, Greg, we're going to be shooting a video here soon. I'm kind of putting it together and we're going to figure out, you know, we've narrowed it down to a couple songs. He says, man, you don't want me in a video. And I thought he was joking.
Yeah. That's so what then, I would think too.
Yeah. So I get the spot, you know, I've got everything picked out. And all of a sudden he's like, I call him back. He's like, man, I do not want to be in a video. Mm. And so I'm like, man, what am I going to do? So I start reaching out to a few friends of mine, you know, and I'm in a pinch. I need a stunt double in a video in like 2 weeks. I've got 2 weeks.
It's crazy.
I start reaching out to all these guys. And, you know, some people knew who I was, some didn't. So, you know, when you reach out to a drummer with a 2 week notice, A, they may have a gig. They may be out of town. They just not enough. So I would get, you know, hey, I'm out of town. I would love to do it. I've got a gig that weekend, you know. So I had a friend of mine that said, hey, why don't you give this guy a call? I think if he's available, he'll do it. So I give this guy a call, and he knew who I was, and he knew what we were about, and he wanted to hear the song. He calls me the next morning. He's like, he's excited. He goes, I'm in. Let's awesome. Do it. So he fills in, and here's what happened, not to get sidetracked, but it's relevant. So when I had walked into the spot originally to do this video to find the set, there was a Days of the New banner in there. And I told Mark, the guy that owns the place, I said, man, I love that band.
Mm-hmm.
I turned that Days of the New CD up. He goes, well, you know, Jesse plays bass for us in the Crashers, and I know Matt pretty well. And it went in one ear and out the other. Because at the time, I think we have a drummer. So anyway, after we make this video, the drummer that we used was I thought the video turned out pretty well. And Steve is very excited and wants to be a part of the band, and he's a great drummer. So everything's going good. So we are getting ready to start recording our follow-up. We're ready. So I'm getting with Steve to start rehearsals.
The drummer, Steve?
Yes.
Okay. And he, let me make sure I'm understanding and following. Steve's the guy that came in and did the video.
Yes.
So yeah, the guy that didn't want to do the video, he was gone. He's
right.
No more in the band.
Right.
What was the reason he wanted to be in a video? It makes no sense. Like a warrant for his arrest or something? Like, I don't.
He just, he didn't elaborate, but being such a good friend, I'm one of these guys. I'll ask twice. Like, hey, are you sure? Once after I say, are you sure? And they say no, I just kind of move on.
Gotcha. Okay. So back to Steve in the second album.
So we're gearing up. We're going to start the recording of the follow-up album. I get a call from Steve the day after we had talked to schedule the rehearsals to put this album together. He said, hey, John, I'm going through a lot right now. It was very genuine. He's a great guy. And he basically was telling me some things he had going on that are personal things. And there again, I said, look, man, do you want to take a day or two to think about this? He just said he didn't think he could do a good job with all the distractions.
I gotcha.
And I said, hey, are you sure? He says, I'm sure. And at that point, I just let it go.
Yeah.
So here's the crazy thing. I didn't know quite what to do. So for a couple days, I just kind of stewed on it. And all of a sudden, a light bulb went off. And I said, Matt Tall, Days of the New. Wonder what he's doing. So I call up Mark.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt. Was he their original drummer, or was he?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, he is the original drummer.
Okay.
So I call Mark, who owned the Maxwell's House of Music, that has all the spaces to rent to do videos. I said, hey, Mark, I explained to him the situation. We need a drummer for this new album. And he goes, John, what do you need? I'll help you with anything. I was like, I want Matt Toll to play drums on our new album. And Mark kind of chuckled a little bit about it. And I was like, no, Mark, make this happen. So Mark reaches out to me the next day and says, hey, you're going to be getting a call. And at the time, I didn't know what Matt was doing. I kind of stalked him on the internet and didn't look.
Yeah.
It didn't look like at the time he was maybe doing anything. So Matt called me a couple days later, and it was about a 2-week process. He was really filling me out. And basically had exhausted to me, hey, I've had a few bands reach out to me and I'm not into it, you know? So he was like, send me, you know, Mark says you guys are good. He's vouching for you. Let me hear the music. So I send him four of the songs. He calls me the next day, man, stuff's pretty good, you know? And he's like, could I hear some more? So at this point, we're talking every day for about 2 weeks, and he's really filling me out. And he calls me on a Friday and asked if I have a minute. I'm like, sure. He said, look, I talked to my wife. I talked to Jesse, who was the bass player in Days of the New and his best friend. And I asked them their opinion and what they thought. And they liked what we were doing. And they said, yeah, I think you should do it. So basically between him wanting to do it and their approval, that's basically how we moved on and added Matt to the lineup, which has been a great thing for us.
Wow, that's really cool. So kind of going back to that first album, what was the response from people? And I'm sure you had to have some people coming in from the old Killed by Cain fan, you know, fans and want to see, hey, what are they doing now and checking that out? But also it's a whole different sound. And I don't want to offend you if you don't think this is true, but you guys have a full beat, but a little bit slowed down. You're not like, you know, as heavy or fast, but you do have a little bit of that Volbeat sound with your vocals and everything. And I like that. I'm a big Volbeat fan, just to kind of describe it to people. But, you know, I know I asked about 50 things there, but whatever you want to add to it, you know, what were people thinking coming into that first album, checking it out? You know, what was the response from people?
Well, the funny thing is you bring up Volbeat, which at the time when we did that first album, I knew nothing of Volbeat at all.
Really?
So what's crazy is I had a few people say, hey, man, kind of got a Volbeat vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I kind of listened to them. And I'm like, okay, well, I see a little similarity. But, you know, the funny thing about that comparison is when we put out that second album, you know, we're getting reviews from that second album. We had a guy that just loved and even talked about it. He's like, I love their first album. I don't like their second album because it reminds me of Volbeat. In other words, if you listen to our first Moonshine Zombies album and the second one, we kind of took our foot off the gas a little bit. And the songs are a little bit more, I guess, commercial, if you even wanted to call it that. But we did that purposely to make it different than the second one. Well, this guy did not like that. So he compared us to Volbeat. So I actually took that as a compliment.
Yeah. Well, when did the second album come out? Because I know you guys have done some videos for it, but I don't know why. I just kind of missed it, the whole second album, because I've been listening to the first album, the self-titled album, for a while now, since that came out in 21.
I think the last album came out in July.
So pretty recent.
Yeah, and we had kind of sat on it for a while because we were waiting for, we had a brand new designed website, and we were trying to launch everything at the same time. So the album could have came out a little bit earlier. So, but basically we released that with the first video, the album and the video, I think at the same time.
For the second album here?
Yes. Our first single was Meeting at the Crossroads. And that was our first video off of the last album.
Okay. How many videos have you done for this second album?
So two. We had three official videos.
I know you had some behind the scenes stuff, and we're promoting the one with where there's like three females or a couple females. Yes. Which song is that for, and what was going on with that video?
She's Gone.
That's right. Okay, I remember the title now.
That was a fun video. We had a good time recording that one.
Yeah, that's you know, do people give you a hard time about the new image or having girls like that in the video? To, you know, people that think, oh, weren't you a Christian or tied in with the Christian scene? Do you have any people come at you and kind of say the judgmental kind of, well, you shouldn't be doing that?
No, I don't really hear about that too much. It's two different, you know, it's two different identities. It was two different bands, which the great thing about life is everything's a learning experience. And what we are doing is just embracing that, basically that Monday through Friday, that hard working man and woman that have worked hard all week. And then come the weekend, they just want to unwind, have some ice cold beer, mm-hmm. and just enjoy the weekend. And that's what Moonshine Zombies is about. It's about embracing that attitude, which, you know, our music is supposed to unite people. And, you know, if people don't understand, the basic thing about bringing up things like that is, you know, a lot of people, that it doesn't matter what kind of music you do or what the band is about, you know, a lot of these people that say things, they don't know me personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the internet for you.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, what is the goal for you guys in this band? And do you want to continue to keep going with this actual band, or are there other ideas that you have for other musical ventures?
You know, the crazy thing is, right before we recorded the second album, I told Anthony, I was like, man, I'd like to maybe record something on my own, you know, because you have to understand also, not only is Anthony the guitar player and songwriter for Moonshine Zombies, he's got a recording studio. So that's a huge passion. It's a huge passion for him. So he's like, yeah, you know, but the fact of the matter is he has kept me so busy. I mean, you know, I kind of joked around because he keeps putting out all these songs, and I said, well, hey, just keep throwing them at me, because eventually you're going to run out of some ideas. Well, guess what? He has not.
Yeah, so that's good.
He's kept me so busy. Anything solo or anything maybe I would want to do or have even thought about, maybe way down the road. I think Moonshine Zombies is the only thing I want to do.
Are you guys playing local shows or going out at all to get to play shows?
We've had such a response to perform that basically what we've discussed is the new album should be out around June. You know, maybe it goes into July, but
June, so you got July, a third album coming out.
We've got six songs already ready.
Cool.
The thing about the new album, we said, look, after we release this third album, we're going to concentrate potentially on live performance, because we've had such an overwhelming response for people wanting to watch us. We even had a local promoter reach out to me that wants to book us. And he's one of the bigger promoters in town. So
is that Dorn? Someone else?
This place does all the concerts in Kentucky, Indiana, Ohio area. So
that'd be cool.
I think basically what we are taking the approach, if we go in that direction, we would probably, instead of trying to be a headline band, we would like to open up for bigger bands and kind of take the approach.
Yeah. Well, you know, would things are so differently now with record labels and everything. And would you prefer to keep doing everything with yourself independently, or would you be willing to maybe try getting on another record label, even though getting on a record label is not really what it used to be, but also how much are they going to try to take from you? What are they going to do? You have all the freedom you have right now. What's, you know, kind of, what's the point when you can do everything you want?
Right. Well, the thing with Anthony having a studio is, you know, one thing that can hurt a band is that creative part. So a lot of people don't know, when you go record an album for a record label, when you get in there and to record an album, you lose creative control because you have a group of guys that's vision could be a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And it can change maybe what you originally thought it could sound like. So the thing, what we would be in a unique situation if the record label came knocking, because we would want to record the album at Anthony's studio. We wouldn't want to go anywhere else. So I don't know. I don't know how that plays out.
Yeah. What do you hope the future holds for you and the band? What would you like to see happen?
Well, the main thing, we want to, you know, just keep evolving, keep that creative juices flowing, and just enjoy it as we're doing it. And if, you know, if people like it, it's going to take care of itself. We're not putting any stress on it at all.
Yeah. And I'm kind of curious, what do you do outside of the music world, you know, or if there's other passions that you might have too, that's not directly music.
One passion I would like to, when I retire, I would like to, maybe move out west, maybe, I don't know, maybe
Yellowstone.
Maybe ride horses, take care of horses, stuff, something like that.
Did you grow up doing stuff like that, or is that something that's kind of just kind of?
No, it's just something every time I've got on a horse, I love it.
Yeah. Any other hobbies, or do you have a family? Do you have children?
Yes, I'm married. I've been married for almost 10 years.
And you have kids?
I have one daughter.
I'm always curious how old she is, but, you know, how do your kids view you as, you know, your dad, but do they like your music? You know, I'm always kind of curious, or they're like, it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I try to share my music with my kids and they're like, whatever, my old music stuff. But yeah, it's just funny. But anyways, I don't want to keep you much longer. I've enjoyed the chat. I obviously want you to tell people where they can find. And I know you got the website. You can tell people where to go. Do you guys have merchandise at this point too?
Yes, we've got shirts. We have koozies. We've got coffee mugs. We've got beer mugs. I think we have some CDs. There's, you can get on our website. It's all on there.
So if anybody wants to get your albums, is there, would that be the best place to go to purchase it, or, what would you say?
If anybody's interested in any kind of merchandise, or just look at, you can get on our website, moonshinezombies.com. And actually, you can listen to every song on the new album.
Okay.
I mean, you can just listen to it, or you can download it. All our videos are on the website. And then obviously, if anybody is on YouTube, mm-hmm. watching a Moonshine Zombies video, hit that subscribe button.
Yeah, you guys have your own YouTube channel. What's the title? Is it just Moonshine Zombies?
Yeah, Moonshine Zombies.
Okay. And, you know, hopefully you guys can get out and start playing more. And, man, you got to tell Steve, I'd love to have him on the show. I've kind of mentioned to him, I'd love to talk to him about his career and his Bride days, and, you know, if it's something he'd like to be on. But it's cool that you guys have lasted this long. And, and also with your other members, and just the journey that you guys have gone through, and the formation and different genres in a way, and to where you're at now. It's a pretty cool story, I think. So, you know, I really encourage people to check out the moonshine stuff, because I think it's really good. It's if you would have never known that you were in your old band or kind of had a different voice and just came in straight to this, you would think, man, this sounds like anything that's out that's popular right now. Like, I know we mentioned Volbeat, and it's current, man. It's not like you guys are hanging on to something that you shouldn't be hanging on to. Your voice sounds great with this genre. So props to you guys for doing such a great job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, but like I said, we've enjoyed it. We're having a good time.
Yeah, well, I always kind of let my guest have the last word. And, you know, if there's anything you want to say to people that are fans of any of the bands you've been in, or of the new music, or anything you just want to put out there, I always let my guest have the last word.
Well, if I could say anything to, you know, your listeners out there, is just check out the new Moonshine Zombies album. Get on YouTube, watch the videos, and just, you know, we're all about just the hardworking man and woman, Monday through Friday, having an ice cold beer on the weekend, you know, and just repeat the process. So, I mean, our music is for everybody just to enjoy.